With summer almost upon us, and just in case you are still looking for a holiday destination with a difference, how about Jaffa, the historic port south of Tel Aviv? I'm making this recommendation not firsthand, you understand, but while doing some research on this town, which in biblical times was called Joppa, I found that CNN Travel had included Jaffa in the top 19 destinations to visit this year, and Wall Street Journal ranked it among the top 10 most intriguing travel destinations. Now, ignoring for a minute the carbon footprint such a journey would undoubtedly cause, Jaffa has, besides its obvious historic heritage, an essential plethora of cafes, boutique hotels, narrow streets, antique art dealers, and galleries, also some surprising attractions to offer. There you can find the world's first blind deaf theatre company called Nalagaad, and perhaps more crucially, Israel's first whiskey distillery, named somewhat predictably Milk and Honey, which of course I, and I'm sure some of you, would be at least curious to taste. It seems that Jaffa, or Joppa, is a place for experimentation, for thinking about something new, something different. Undoubtedly, being a prominent harbour and trading destination had to do with that, a place where cultures and customs intermingled. And this is the place where Peter had his vision, and in our reading we find him trying to justify to his more orthodox colleagues in Jerusalem why he ended up going to see Cornelius. Now, the actual events he's referring to unfold in the previous chapter, if you want to go back and read that. And now Peter has to explain himself and how he could possibly break with the holiness code, which was so dear and so integral to the early church, in order to take the message of Jesus to the Gentiles. And not just any Gentile, of course, but a Roman centurion, who was the captain not of conscripts, but fully committed Italian soldiers. In short, the enemy. And here is a community which holds its characteristics dear, their way of belief, of living and eating together, and Peter seems to ignore all of that. Last week, I was on a diocesan training day entitled Engaging with Difference. I believe Giles attended a similar day a couple of years ago. And the examples and exercises they take you through on the day are predictably designed to make you feel uncomfortable, either because the people and the scenarios are so different that you just don't know how to engage, or because you suddenly realize with some shock that you yourself have been complicit in a system of discrimination. We're not allowed to actually tell what happened. That's a promise we made at the beginning of the day. Suffice to say, we all felt challenged. We tackled issues of racism, gender inequality, LGBT+, disability, nationality, pay gaps, and ageism. One of our main values here at St. Peter's is, of course, inclusivity. We want to be a place which is welcoming to all. Now, assuming that we are serious about that, We also have to ask if that welcome is conditional. You can come and join us as long as you agree with us and with how we do things. And if we wanted to go a step further, we would have to ask ourselves if perhaps change is required of us before others can feel included. What would it take for us to be willing to make such changes in order for those others to feel welcome? Asking such questions is undoubtedly helpful, but I would suggest only of limited value, because real change rarely happens theoretically. It almost always takes a personal experience, a personal encounter. In our reading here, we do not see a community discussing an outreach program for Gentiles. No, it is the Spirit of God bringing two individuals together for a purpose. Only as Peter and his companions meet Cornelius and his household and listen to his experience are they able to connect and perceive God's Spirit at work in their lives as well. So, who is Cornelius? We learn that he was a devout man who feared God, had a habit of praying and of giving alms. We are not told how he defined God. Romans, after all, were known to worship many gods, and their main objection to Christianity and Judaism was that they said there was supposed to be only one God. If you were here last week, and don't worry if you were not, because nowadays sermons are available online and you can listen. But if you were here, you will have heard Charles talk about Jesus as the Good Shepherd. He talked about having other sheep. Less obvious, perhaps, but nevertheless, sheep who hear God's voice. Cornelius, it seems to me, fits this category perfectly. He was a Roman centurion, but he was also open to hearing from God. And God heard his prayers and sent him a messenger. I'm not surprised that it took a vision on the one hand and a messenger on the other side to bring those two unlikely men together, separated by far more than just 40 miles. These are the kind of events which make you realize that the chances of this happening are so remote as to appear impossible. This has God's fingerprints all over it, not for a general change, but a colliding of two very specific worlds to create a new and even bigger reality. I wonder what it will take for us to be open to visions and to messengers in order to fulfill God's plan rather than our own. I wonder if we can imagine a God so generous with a love so strong that we would be prepared and even compelled to take his message to those who are different or even dangerous. Joppa, the place, of course, has a very different connotation as well. This is the harbour the prophet Jonah chose to try and get away from taking God's message to the enemy of the day, to the town of Nineveh, at the heart of the Assyrian Empire. Joppa, you might say, is something of a safe haven, perhaps in a way that church is to us. We, like Jonah and Peter, have been entrusted with a message and a mandate to engage with those who we may see as different. May we choose to follow Peter's example and cross all manners of divides and barriers, and then see, as Peter did, that God is at work in their lives and that they are waiting for us. Amen.